Okay, so this year we have the rare zchut to have an Erev Pesach Shachaliyos b'Shabbos. It's going to be a little bit less rare in the upcoming years. It hasn't been for 13 years, so this hasn't been since 2008. So I don't know how well you remember the last one, but, or how well any of us remember the last one. It's been quite a while. The next few years, there will be a few, and then there'll be a 20-year gap. So it's something which happens at a very irregular schedule, and there are a lot of benefits that we can gain from focusing on the opportunities that come from an Erev Pesach Chelios b'Shabbos. So just to go through some of the protocols and some of the issues. So to begin with, so we started the Masechta this year learning about Bedikas Chametz and Bir Chametz, and those aspects are all pushed up this year. So we do the Bedika essentially two nights before Pesach. We do the Bedika on Thursday night, even though there was a discussion in some Svarim that would it have been something that could have been compatible with Friday night? Is there a way to do Bedikah L'Or HaNer on Shabbos? But the main issue would seem to be that we push it up because, as we learned, so Bedikah is for the purposes of Biur, that Biur is begun with the Bedikah, and that's why we make the bracha on Biur Chametz when we do the Bedikah. And Biur Chametz is, for the most part, done on Friday, then essentially 2 days before Pesach. And this is a whole sugya, it's a machlokas in the Gemara. It revolves around issues of what is tashbisu primarily. Does tashbisu have to be havaras, a machlokas, as we've discussed, which would make it more fundamentally a problem for Shabbos? Or is it possible to do tashbisu with other methods that could be compatible with Shabbos? So there's a lot to say about that, but in practice, we want to keep things as normal as possible so that we shouldn't cause a confusion for future years. So we go through everything pretty much under the same protocol. So we have the Mechiras Chametz take place at the same time, Friday morning, as it would if it were Erev Yom Tov. And we do everything pretty much on the same schedule, even though Chametz isn't actually going to be prohibited at that time as it would be if it were Erev Yom Tov. But we want to keep everything as standard as possible. So we do the Mechiras Chametz then, even though there is what to discuss, that we're going to need to have some Chametz left over for afterwards. So we're going to have to preserve some bread for our Sudas on Shabbos, and that's particularly complicated, so we'll talk about how those play out in a second. But having that bread available requires us to make a condition in the selling of the chametz and to tell the purchaser that we are leaving out certain designated rolls so that they'll be available to us for use at the Suda. And that's better than other options. So, for example, there was a discussion that maybe we should make a sale that is conditioned to delay. And so maybe we should say, okay, let's go through everything with the sale Friday morning as we would a regular Erev Yom Tov, and say that the sale will actually kick in 24 hours from now, and make it that way. So it'll take place on Shabbos, but we won't be doing anything. We'll be going about our Shabbos, and the sale will just take place passively. So does that work, or is that permissible? So it's an interesting discussion, because Kinyanim on Shabbos is actually an Isser D'Rabbanan, Mishum Kosev. It's not an Isser D'Oraisa. And Rabbi Akiva Eiger and this whole discussion about whether you could have a Tanai on a sale, that the sale should take place on Shabbos. Is that a violation of the Isser of Mecha Chumemker on Shabbos? So normally when it comes to a Malacha, So a malacha can't really take place passively. That's the yisod that many achronim developed, that you can't be asleep at bed and have a malacha happening without your active engagement, at least on a Torah level. But when you're dealing with a gzeira d'rabbanan, so that might be different. It might be that a gzeira d'rabbanan can be violated even passively, which is a little bit of an unusual situation. In a sense, it makes the dinim d'rabbanan in some ways more chomer, at least for practical purposes, than the malachas d'oraisa. So it seems like there is a concern that this could create a iser of the d'rabbanan of Mecca Chumemkar on Shabbos. So to make the sale only kick in on Shabbos very possibly still creates a problem. So that's not going to work so well for us, at least if we're right about that. And to say that we'll just make the sale outright, but we'll assume that the purchaser is mochel, and we can take from some of the bread in order to use it for Suda Shabbos, but without making that arrangement explicitly, I think is very harmful to our attitude towards Mechiras Chametz, because the whole efficacy of Mechiras Chametz, as far as I understand it, is premised on the idea that you take it very seriously, and that you understand that the Chametz is really off-limits to you over the course of Pesach. And that's what we're trying to accomplish, that we should satisfy the technicalities of not only Chametz on Pesach, but also it should be genuine in every sense of the word, so that it will accomplish its goal, as we talked about regarding Balyura Balyumatze, and the understanding that the purpose of Balyura Balyumatze is to keep us away from Chametz. So the sale should also do that if we take it very seriously, if we understand that Chametz is really off limits, even if it's in our house, it belongs to somebody else, and there's an issue of gazel in taking it, that will successfully keep us away from it. So anything that chips away at that mentality to say, well, it's okay, he's mocho, that seems to undermine what we're trying to accomplish. So it's better to make it clear and to say when we sell the Chametz that we are setting aside from the beginning these roles for this purpose and they were never included in the sale. So that's actually another advantage of this whole situation, because having to be very careful about this helps to emphasize what we want to do with the sale, to understand that the sale is in order to appreciate that the Chametz is off limits and that we are so careful with this transaction that that will indeed accomplish that goal. So the more that we have to really take great pains to be precise with this, that actually helps reinforce that mindset as long as we're careful about it. So that's basically what we do, is that we leave these roles out of the sale. Theoretically, if you have the access to this, you could also just acquire bread after the time of the sale and use that for your sudas on Shabbos. It's difficult though, because if you're going to bake the bread, so you have to have a chametz oven available, and most households will have switched over to Pesach and don't have any chametz oven available. And to purchase it, you have to find a store that's open and selling kosher bread. So that's theoretically possible, but may not be available to everyone. So it's difficult to get a hold of, but if you can get a hold of bread after the sale, so then that doesn't present a problem as far as that's concerned at all. But that's one of the challenges. So far, so good. Everybody with me? Okay, so then with that, so then we go towards Shabbos, and on Shabbos, as I said, we have to deal with the sudo. So we have to be very careful to make sure to keep the chametz away from everything, because the house is Pesach Dik, and that could be a source of great tension and great risk. So they have to be very, very careful in how the bread is kept while we're waiting to use it. And you have to make careful calculations of just how much you need in order to accomplish the sudos. And then the timing gets complicated when we get into the next day. So Friday night is one thing, so you can have your dinner Friday night with these rolls, But then when you get into the next day, so things get complicated because we need to have shalosh shudos, so we need to have a total of 3 sudos, 1 at night and 2 during the daytime. And how are we going to have the 2 during the daytime, considering the fact that the Isra Chametz is going to set in already early in the morning, not so early in the morning, but before the midday. And so it's already a pressure to get in your lunch before that. But we have the extra pressure because we need to get in 2 sudos. So how are we going to do that? How are we going to get in a second suda in order to accomplish shalosh shudos as well? So that involves a little bit of acrobatics. So there are a couple of possible options. So one possible option is to have egg matzah. So that the Shulchan Aruch allows, and that was the practice of some. And if you recall, so this all ties into the sugya that we spoke about at the very beginning of the Zman, the idea that Tosfos introduces from the Yerushalmi, and that most assume is practical halacha, with the exception of the Tosfos Rid, but for the most part this is considered to be the din, that there's a prohibition to have matzah on Erev Pesach, kolochol matzah v'Erev Pesach, chilabol rosos v'peis chamav. So if we can't have matzah, and after pretty early in the day we can't have chametz either, so what can we have? So according to Tosfos that we saw, so Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Tam, that you can have egg matzah, that you can have matzah ashira. However, the Ramah is not as excited about it, discussion what exactly he means. And this was a major discussion in the later postgame. Is egg matzah acceptable or not? And it goes to the question of what is the nature of this issue of not having matzah on Erev Pesach. So is the concern that we're going to diminish our enthusiasm for the matzah by having had some kind of matzah? Does it matter if the matzah doesn't taste exactly like the matzah that we use at the Seder? What if it does taste like the matzah that we use at the Seder, but it's disqualified for some other reason, so it's not going to be valid for the kiyum of the mitzvah of matzah? All of this we talked about when trying to address that sugya and that whole issue. So that ends up creating a machlokas as far as where egg matzah fits in. So the Aruch HaShulchan understands that when the Ramah says that it's not something that we do, that the Ramah was saying that just because it's also concerns about having egg matzah on Pesach itself, so that maybe we just don't have egg matzah in the house. So maybe that's the issue. It's not going to be available for the role of Shalosh Shudos. So there were various views on this. Rav Shechter actually does recommend using egg matzah because he feels that that is preferable to some of the other potential compromises that might be involved in pursuing other options. So what are other options? So also theoretically could take the position that you don't need to have bread for Shalosh Shudos and that other items could be acceptable, other mine tagima, and maybe to have meat or fish or fruit, and to have a suda of that type. The Bhagavad Gita discusses breaking up the suda in the morning into 2. So being credited with 2 sudos for that time. That's not that simple because you can't just simply bench in the middle of the meal and then wash again and then call it 2 meals. That's going to create brachos she'eino tzrichos. So you have to have a real hefsek in between, and being that the timing is tight to begin with, so to create not just 1 meal in that time, but 2 meals with a hefsek in between is a little bit of a challenge. Some might feel that it undermines the whole purpose of Oneg Shabbos, that you should be able to enjoy Shabbos through the meals. And that might be one reason to prefer a different alternative for the afternoon. But that's a part of a range of possibilities. In addition, part of the concern is that ideally the sudas are supposed to be broken up into 3 time slots. You're supposed to have dinner in the night slot and lunch in the morning and shalosh shudos in the afternoon. So to crowd the 2 sudas into the morning is not really perfect from that perspective. So even if you do crowd the two into that slot, so then you're still maybe better off having some kind of mini targim in the afternoon in order that you should be able to have shal shudas of some type in the afternoon as well and be considerate of that position also. Yasi?
Is the
So I guess it depends on how you define it. If you've started before, so does that, how does that going to help you think if you just try?
You're going to have matzah like 40 and then just drag it on for, I mean, that's for 2 hours, but.
You said that if you have your, if you have chametz then, well, it's going to have to be a long few days.
You have bread, yeah, chametz and then.
You'd have to drag it on pretty significantly because the issue starts before chatzos.
Would that solve the issue?
I don't think it's really going to end up helping so much because you still have to, if you're trying to be yotzei with the bread, so then that bread's still going
to
have to be.
You need to have bread after. So.
You don't, well, no, not necessarily, but just you're going to have a very schlepped out shal shudas that has a big, big something in the middle because the bread part's going to have to be before the time of the Yisra Chameit, which is earlier than Chatzos, and then to have something that's still is representing the food after Chatzos, I don't know how much you really accomplished. You have a 3 hour shal shudas with some meat at the end and bread at the beginning. It's not really going to help us so much. Now the question of when the Yisra Matzah begins is also a discussion in Poskim. And there are many different views, so that's a good question whether that starts at Chatzos. That might theoretically give you a little bit of space to have matzah right before Chatzos and then have something. Either way, you're going to have something else to make it the Suda after Chatzos. But that is the question whether matzah begins at Chatzos or whether that begins at daybreak. Probably it's more common among poskim or whether maybe even begins Friday night. So that's why Friday night you're advocating having rolls. And to have matzah anytime during the day is going to be questionable because of that possibility. There is another angle that the Zohar mentions having shal shudas through Torah that you could learn, and that could be considered shal shudas. It's something which is also a little bit shaky as far as practice. It's interesting that there's an objection that's quoted in the name of Reb Chaim Brisker, and the Klausenberger Rebbe quotes a similar objection in very different language. You could express it in Brisker language, or you could express it in Hasidish language, that Reb Chaim Brisker was quoted as saying that to rely on food, to rely on Torah, to be like food for Shal Shudas, it's not such a good idea because maybe the Dvar Torah will get slugged up, and you can't slug up a piece of gefilte fish. So it reflects this attitude that maybe the status of the Torah, as even counting as Torah, is going to be contingent on its validity and its being oisgehalten, and you're going to risk that it may not count, while the gefilte fish, you know, is gefilte fish. While the Klausenberger Rebbe expressed it more in Hasidic language, says this idea that the Zohar is talking about, that Torah could count, you have to be in a real madriga in order for that to make sense. You have to be relating in a whole different level, and it's just not practical for us, Bisman Hazad, to think that our Torah is going to be experienced as if it was actual eating. The Zohar also reflects the possibility that maybe this type of situation, our Pesach Chalios B'Shabbos, maybe we're just not obligated in Shal Shudas. So that's an idea that Rav Nosson Gishtetner has a tshuva, which he talks about this question in Chelik Beis of the tshuva Slaharis Nosson, and he tries to explain why this should be, and he considers, in light of the idea that Chazal have, that Kol Hama'aneg Es HaShabbos Shal Shudas Nitzol Mechavle Mashiach, that normally you want to have Shal Shudas because we have this guarantee that if we create an Onik Shabbos in that way, we're going to be saved from the more difficult aspects of the Messianic era. And he quotes from his ancestor, the Chassam Sofer, that Erev Pesach, Shechal Yos B'Shabbos, is a time that is especially Mesugal for the Gula. So it says maybe the Erev Pesach, Shechal Yos B'Shabbos itself kind of replaces the importance of Shal Shudas as far as bringing us an easy path to the Gula. We could maybe combine this and suggest a little differently that, assuming we are trying to have Shal Shudas, but ironically, perhaps, it creates a bigger focus on Shal Shudas than any other time of the year, or in this case, any other time in the past 13 years, because people aren't always as careful as they could be as far as Shal Shudas. And now, all of a sudden, Davka, when it's hard, so everyone's paying attention to Shal Shudas and trying to figure out how exactly they're going to fit it in. So this is one of the many opportunities that Erev Pesach Shechal Yos B'Shabbos provides for us, that we're paying much more attention to certain ideas that otherwise could kind of fly by. And here, this is the Shal Shudas that gets the most focus of any Shal Shudas, not just of the year, but of this group of years. And therefore, the idea that there is a Zchus that comes from three Sudas on Shabbos is maybe even more powerful on Erev Pesach Shechal Yos B'Shabbos. And that could be a reason why it's more Mesugal for Gula. Not that it should be a reason to exempt us from Shal Shudas, but that the extra attention to Shal Shudas is itself part of that Zchus. And maybe that's something to think about. There is an interesting tshuva in the tshuva of Shraga HaMeir, of Shraga Feivel Schnellbeck, who was a rabbi in London, passed away many years ago. So he has a tshuva situation which maybe isn't so uncommon to think about, or isn't so unlikely, could definitely happen. Let's say somebody oversleeps on that Shabbos morning, and he wakes up, and it's just a few minutes till the Zmanis or Chameis. And he hasn't davened yet, he hasn't made Berachas HaTorah yet, so what should he do? Should he hurry up and eat something in order to get at least that Suda Shabbos for the Chomet? Or should he daven first, make Berachas HaTorah? So he goes through the different possibilities there as far as eating before davening. So the Gemara in Brachos has a drasha from a pasuk that to eat before davening is to put your gaiva, is to put your pride before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's why we have a whole discussion that if you're going to have, let's say, coffee without sugar, you're going to have tea, you're going to have something that's very light before davening. It's not necessarily gaiva, it's not the blanket issue with all food. So should we say that it's the same mitzvah? It's also not called gaiva. He goes through various possibilities as far as understanding what exactly the actual soapsman is for the different things, and it's interesting. It's an interesting discussion to have, but it's important to avoid that issue and to try to be very careful not to get in that situation, because you have a lot to try to squeeze in that day, so it's a good time not to oversleep. But part of the discussion, he also talks about the Berachas HaTorah issue. So why is Berachas HaTorah so significant to this? So there is an attitude some have, and this is a little bit of a synergy in Chazara. You may recall when we were learning the first part, so we talked about the whole sugya of Berachas HaMitzvos, and the idea that the tshuva and the Kajik Lover and the Eretz Tzvi talks about this, that maybe if a mitzvah doesn't have a specific bracha, that Berachas HaTorah actually is also the Berachas HaMitzvah and all the mitzvahs of the day. So here, before you do this mitzvah, you should have Berachas HaTorah in practice also. Is that a concern? So he talks about the various sudden, definitely the best dates to try to avoid that problem. Don't oversleep on that morning and put yourself in a very constrained situation already. We have a lot to work out, so that's something that you want to try to avoid as well. So that's also part of the complication, and that's also something that we need to try to be careful about in order to get all these sudos in. It's interesting also, just to give us another opportunity to kind of chazer and reflect, that this puts a greater emphasis on what we saw at the beginning of the parak, when we were trying to figure out the whole issue of A, not eating matzah on Erev Pesach, and also what will become an issue later in the day, that we shouldn't eat too much before the Seder b'chlal. And that's what the first Mishnah tells us. The first din of the parak tells us that Arvei Pesachim Samach Mincha Yoichal Adam Matshet Hachshach. So the idea of not eating, so that also creates an additional concern that even if what we're eating later in the day is not going to involve egg matzah or bread, but even anything, we should be careful not to have too much because of the impact it could have on the Seder. And if you recall, we talked about how surprising it is that we find this great effort to preserve the mitzvah of matzah, not just the mitzvah itself, but the way Rashi and the Rashbam understand that we're trying to protect the hiddur of matzah that would come from eating it l'tayavon. And that, if you recall, so we saw that the other Rishonim, the Ran and Rabbeinu David, understood that it wasn't about te'avon, but that it was about making sure that we don't have achila gasa, that if we're going to eat too much in our Pesach, so that maybe we'll be full, and maybe it won't even count as a mitzvah if we eat matzah in that state. So then, maybe you could understand a little bit more the idea of Chazal making an enactment not to eat them in order to protect the mitzvah from getting lost completely. But it's still surprising because normally we understand that Chazal don't make dinim derabanan to protect positive mitzvos. They generally only do that to protect Yisurim min HaTorah based on the pasuk Ushmartim es Mishmarti, and the Gemara Yivama says Asay Mishmaris un Mishmarti, and Mishmaris is a prohibition. So normally the Prima Gadim says we don't have these dinim in order to protect positive mitzvahs. So Rav Kook wrote that here you see that it's not true, that apparently we do have it to protect positive mitzvahs. But it's even more surprising if it's there to protect not just the mitzvah itself, but to protect the hiddur mitzvah, if it's there to protect the idea of te'avon, which itself was a chiddush, that's called the hiddur mitzvah. So that's also interesting. So what we discussed was that all of this comes to emphasize that matzah is not just the only kosher Pesach way to eat because chametz is bad and we want to stay away from chametz on Pesach, so we have to have matzah, but that matzah has inherent value to it, and that matzah, as the Beis Halevi explains, really predated Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that matzah was always a part of the Torah, and Yetzias Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrated, so that matzah is meaningful in that process, but matzah still has its own significance, therefore, that predates Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that the whole notion of appreciating mitzvos as a whole is something which the Seder is meant to contain and to reflect, and that we want to emphasize that we're not just set free to do whatever we want, we're not just liberated from bondage, but that we were given freedom so that we can go into Avodas Haboreh, so that we can serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the theme of Chavivos HaMitzvos as a whole is actually embedded within the Seder, and we saw a couple of reflections with that, and that it's all sourced within matzah. So we have matzah as reflective of our whole entrance into the bond of mitzvos in many different ways in which it symbolizes that. Chametz, yes, representing negative messages of the Yetzer Hara and the lack of discipline, and matzah representing the opposite, and that that's something which has inherent value to us, and therefore we want to emphasize that that's the case, that we are excited about this and we're excited about mitzvos as a whole. So we saw that the Avnei Nezer understood that when the Gemara says on Daf Kuf Zayin that Rava would provoke his appetite by drinking on Erev Pesach in order to have a greater interest in matzah, have a greater appetite for matzah, and that the Avnei Nezer understood that that meant you should have even more matzah than you're obligated to have. And he understood this is true by mitzvahs overall, that we should do more than we're obligated, that it's the opposite of Enos and Mitzvahs Chavilos Chavilos that we discussed recently. It's a way of showing that we don't find mitzvahs to be a burden, we find it to be something we're excited about, we want to do even more. So it's a Kol Torah Kula idea, but it's based in matzah, it's derived from matzah. So this is one of the major messages of the Seder. And we want to emphasize that, and that reflects itself a few ways. So that the Rambam, when he talks about not eating on Erev Pesach, he has it basically with three levels. He says, we don't eat matzah, so that there should be a heker for the mitzvah. And we shouldn't eat too much before the Seder itself, so that we should have teavon for the matzah. And that there were great tzaddikim who would make themselves very hungry all day, so that they would have a chavivos for the matzos, the way it sounds in some girsos, but in the Shabbos Franklin, he says, mitzvos, mitzvos as a whole, they should show their enthusiasm for it, so that's a theme of the whole Seder. And we saw that that was what Rashi quotes from the Mechilta in Parshas Bo, that when the Jews were leaving the Mitzrayim, they were carrying the matzah on their shoulders. And Chazal asked, well, why were they doing that? Don't they have animals they could put the matzahs on? So Rashi quotes, this was because the chavivas of the mitzvah, and the Mechilta actually says chavivas of mitzvos in general. So this whole theme of chavivas of mitzvos was expressed at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's a major theme of the Seder, that we want to show this is something we're very excited about and we're very enthusiastic about. So these halachos are important, and we don't necessarily have as much attention for them in other years, but now that we have the whole balance of Erev Pesach, Shechalios, B'Shabbos, and we have to try to somehow manage everything, try to be Ma'aneh Gesa Shabbos with the Shalosh Shittos, and also preserve our appetite for the Seder with the same kind of enthusiasm as we would have every other year, so it requires really a great focus on all of these themes, and that's a tremendous opportunity for us. That's an opportunity to really appreciate these ideas, which I think with everything else going on, we very often otherwise would miss. And that's true in a much broader sense about Erev Pesach, Shechalios, B'Shabbos, because it's also the case that there's very little that we can do otherwise on that day. It's actually, despite all of these complexities, it ends up being a much more chill atmosphere than a typical Erev Pesach, because we can't do anything to prepare for the Seder at that point. Certainly can't do anything that involves melachos, but even the things that don't involve melachos involve hachana. So we can't prepare, even without melachos, for the Seder, and can't set the table and do things like that, and even to ask a non-Jew to set the table. So that would seem to involve issues of zilzul of Shabbos, and that also draws upon the point we mentioned before, that when dealing with drabbanans, even if you're not actively involved, possibly passively, it's also going to provoke issues. So there's very little that we can do that we normally associate with an Erev Pesach. There's very little that we can do on this Erev Pesach. So that ends up being a positive also, because normally it's very hard to prepare spiritually for the Seder, to be able to prepare mentally and to spend time looking at the Haggadah. So normally we're grateful in Chutz La'aretz that we have a second Seder, because at least that gives us one day to prepare for the second Seder by looking at the Haggadahs, or to draw upon what we did the first Seder. But this year, so we have the opportunity to actually have that whole Erev Pesach when we're not running around and doing other things, to look at the Haggadah and to review the sugyas that we learned, and to have some kind of genuine preparation for that first Seder, mentally and spiritually. That's really a tremendous opportunity. So all of the points of focus that our Pesach, Chalios, B'Shabbos is allowing us to have, so here in the broadest sense, it's just allowing us to focus on everything, allowing us to focus on everything about the Seder, especially this year where our synergy comes from every direction. And in Shir, we've been talking about all of the issues of the Seder these past months, and anyone who's been learning Daf Yomi has learned the whole Masechta coming up to Pesach. So it's really an opportunity to be prepared in a super powerful way. So that's something to be very grateful for. And we can also add that perhaps special Mila, like the Chassam Sofer said, that Erev Pesach, Shechalios, B'Shabbos is special. There is a discussion in the Achronim in general, to go back to a first parak issue, so the question of Tashbisu, And the issue of, is Tashbisu just goal-oriented, that we want to be in a state of having no chametz, or is the act of destroying chametz and seeking after the chametz and getting rid of it, is that something which has inherent value, separate and beyond from just reaching a state where you don't have chametz, that has nafkaminas in all directions. So, as Rav Soloveitchik discussed in a raya, that there is tashbisu even without reaching that goal of being completely rid of chametz is erev Pesach shechalios v'shavos, because here you have the involvement of tashbisu on Friday, like we discussed, but you're not totally rid of your chametz because you have to leave some over for the sudas and shavos. So the situation of erev Pesach shechalios v'shavos shows us that there is tashbisu even without getting rid of all of the chametz, that every part of the chametz that you get rid of is also a kiyum in tashbisu. And that's also one of the major themes in Pesach, that if we see chametz as representing the Yetzer Hara and representing that which gets in our way, so the process of not only avoiding it, but actively seeking it out and combating it, and a part of what we saw that Bedikas Chametz represents, that the first sugi in the beginning of the year represents the preference for Bedika over Bittul, and we quoted from Rav Cook at that point, that Bittul is more passive, and Bedika, the idea that we're actually looking for how we can deal with the negative influences that Chametz represents. So that's also a very powerful imagery. And if that's what we see in Tashbisu, and Erev Pesach Shchalios B'Shabbos is a raya for that, that Tashbisu has a value even before it reaches that end goal. So it shows us that that's something that we're trying to glean from this whole experience as well. So it's an additional message of Erev Pesach Shchalios B'Shabbos. So the idea that the Chasam Sofer had at the time, that's particularly in the Sugal for the Geula, I think we can reflect upon all of these ideas and see that maybe that should indeed be the case. So just to recap where the special opportunities are, so we have extra focus on preserving our enthusiasm for matzah and the realization of just how important that is. We have an extra focus on being Ma'aneg HaShabbos, which is supposed to save us from the Chevelei HaMashiach, and that we have to work harder to accomplish than we do on any other Shabbos throughout the year. And that itself is a message. We have the greater zehiros that we have to have in terms of the mechiros chametz, the greater care in terms of making sure that there's no gezel involved in the chametz that we're using. And that's also one of the major themes of geula. The Smad writes that we can't have geula unless we're perceived and we have the reality of being people of honesty and integrity. So being careful with that is something that is a very powerful opportunity as well. And the realization that Tashbisu is something that has inherent value even in stages before you get to the full thing, and the message of Chametz is something representing our personal pitfalls that we're working to try to combat. And then just broadly, the idea that we are able to appreciate everything about Pesach, that we're able to really prepare in a ruchnius way and to really think about all the inyanim of the Seder before we have even the first Seder, is a special opportunity. So perhaps all of these are things that we can seize upon in this unique, not unique, this rare Erev Pesach Shchalios B'Shabbos that hasn't been in the past 13 years. And by building on all these things, hopefully we should be zocha to a geula shleima, meaning the big long-term geula, and also the geula from the magefa that we are still struggling with. And that last Pesach, we had such an impact, and this Pesach, we hope we're better than last Pesach, but we still have a ways to go, so we still are looking for a complete geula. So hopefully being able to seize upon all of these opportunities would give us a geula shleima, and we should only know better things. Okay, so we will stop here. Tomorrow we will continue with more specific inyanim of the Seder, and I look forward to seeing you then. Have a terrific day.